Christmas time. Great song to feed the hungry of the world. And man, what an eaten time of year this is. So many holiday parties coming up, so many get-togethers. We all have to count our blessings that we have. So much excess in almost all cases. There are plenty of people that don't. We, want to remember them. Constantly talking about charities and working with people to help others. That said, this is as I say, just one of the most eatenest times of the year, with so many things going on and holiday baking going on at a fever pitch. And that's why on our Food Time show in December, we always save plenty of time to talk about baking, to talk about some of the basics of it all. Even though you may have done it year after year, you may be using your mom or grandmother's recipes that have been in your family for years and years and years and for generations. Always good to hear from experts. And that's why on this week's food show, we are so happy to have joining us one of the most renowned bakers in the world. Dori Greenspan has authored, I believe it's 12 cookbooks now, if I've got my counting correctly. She was named Cookbook Author of the Year in 2010 by the IACP. She is a three-time James Beard Award winner. She has collaborated with many, many celebrated chefs through the years, among them the great Julia Child. And it was my pleasure to meet Dori recently at WGN TV and to do a segment with her, to stand side by side with this baking genius. I thought, we've got to have her on the Radio Food Show. And Dori, happy holidays to you. Nice to have you on the program.
Great to be with you. I had so much fun when we were on the show together.
Didn't we have a nice, time that day. And, we baked up some, when I say we, I mean you, baked up.
As I recall, you were stirring away.
I don't think that really qualifies as baking anything. I was your assistant at very, very best. But anyway, we learned so much. Her latest book is called Baking Chez Moi, Recipes from My Paris Home to Your Home Anywhere. And if you are at all interested in baking, this is a wonderful book to add to your collection. A wonderful book if you've got somebody who is into baking. What a fantastic holiday gift that this would be. Tell us a little about, before we just talk about some basics and helping people with their holiday baking today, Dori, just talk to me a little about Baking Chez Moi.
Baking Chez Moi was, it's my 11th book, actually.
11th,
and,
okay.
After working and living in France for almost 20 years, the recipes that I collected for Baking Chez Moi surprised me. They are really, I ended up calling them French comfort baking, because they were the exact opposite of those very fancy pastries that we see and love in pastry shops.
Yeah.
These are the recipes that people make at home.
Oh, boy.
And they're warm, they're generous, they're satisfying, and they're simple. French people really, they don't really bake very much at home. They don't bake anything fussy. They don't bake anything finicky. So when they bake for family, for people they love, and they bake really simple desserts. And so I was so happy to be able to collect these recipes from friends and to gather them in the pages of Baking Chez Moi.
And you've broken this down into several categories of simple cakes and fancy cakes and tarts and baby cakes and petite pastries, cookies and bars and fruits and creams and frozen desserts and just some of the basics. Do you have some particular favorites in all of this?
June, there are two it's funny. I always feel like my recipes are like my children. It's hard to name a favorite, but
right.
There are two recipes that I have ended up making over and over again. One is the custardy apple squares, and these are both easy. This is a recipe that you probably have the ingredients at home and you could make it as soon as we're finished talking. Just apples that are sliced, and a crepe batter, a batter of just butter, flour, sugar, eggs. Mix the two together, bake them. It is just a soft, custardy, fruity cake that takes nothing to make. It's delicious. I do it all the time. And the other is Laurent's slow-roasted spiced pineapple.
Okay, that sounds complicated already. But I'm sure it's not.
This is the easiest.
This is the easiest
pineapple.
Okay.
Put it in a baking sheet.
Okay.
Put some spices over it, anything you've got in the cupboard, whole spices. Mix up jam, orange juice, and booze. Or more orange juice. Mix it up, put it on top of the pineapple, and bake it. It's terrific. I made it for Thanksgiving.
You know what, Dory? You made it when we were on the news.
You tasted it.
Yeah, when we had it on the WGN News. I didn't know that was that fancy name was this delicious pineapple, sort of spiced pineapple that you had made.
Dean, I love that you said that, because that's kind of the way I feel about so many of the recipes in baking chez moi. They sound... They sound elegant, and they are, but they're really, really simple. I mean, the pineapple is essentially just roasted fruit. Sits in the oven for 2 hours, baste it when you pass by the oven and remember it, and then serve it. And it's great for the holidays, because holiday meals end up being feast meals. They're long, often they're heavy. Traditional desserts can be heavy. It's nice to have fruit on the table, and this is a great dessert to go with all of the traditional desserts.
Yeah, and you know, you know, fruit is great to put on the table, and of course, fresh fruit is great. But you know, this time of year, you want something that's a little more comfort, something that kind of sticks to the ribs a little bit, that you know, gives you that nice warm feeling. And I'm telling you, this slow roasted pineapple couldn't have been more delicious. It's you know, all the flavors blend together. It's a little more subtle. It's a little less acidic than, you know, taking a piece of, you know, fresh cut pineapple.
Exactly. Right.
And it's it would just be you know, delightful to serve after you know, a big Thanksgiving meal. Or these are also, I mean, depending on how you cut the pineapple, wouldn't this be great to put out on a holiday buffet? How beautiful would it be? And
absolutely. Absolutely. So you can roast the pineapple in quarters, cut it into wedges, and put it in a beautiful bowl, just like people serve themselves. And if you use, you know, I like to put a vanilla bean in that mix of spices and some star anise. And so actually, when it's roasting, no matter what time of year, the house kind of smells like Christmas.
Yeah.
And it looks so beautiful to have the spices speckling the pineapple. But yeah, just put it in a beautiful bowl, big spoon, let people serve themselves. It's wonderful. And any leftover syrup, poaching liquid, is great in sparkling water, can be used to make a cocktail, and is spectacular over vanilla ice cream. So it's kind of like a two-in-one dessert.
Sure. And I love that you keep bringing booze back into the conversation, Dory, also.
It was so funny, because when Laurent gave me the recipe, he said, you know, just anything you have in the house, rum or Armagnac or cognac. And I said, well, could, if people don't want to use alcohol, could we just double the orange juice? He said, you could, but I wouldn't.
Well, you know, for some people it works, and for some people, why waste the moment?
It's good with just orange juice as well, though.
I'm sure it is. You have to tell me, you know, as the weather is, you know, getting chilly here in Chicago, as it is in New York as well. I was just there the other day. This hot chocolate panna cotta, you have to tell me about this.
Oh, this is such, you know, panna cotta is having its moment in France. And it's such an easy dessert, because it's actually a no-bake dessert. Milk and cream are warmed, and the reason that it holds together and has that wonderful kind of slip-through-your-teeth silky texture is a little bit of gelatin. And panna cotta can be made in all kinds of flavors, but the one that I love is the one that you chose, Dean, is that hot chocolate panna cotta. So it's, you essentially make hot chocolate and then chill it and turn it into panna cotta with this little bit of gelatin. And it has all, it's such an odd contrast because it has all of the warm flavors of chocolate, but it's cold.
Ah, okay. All right.
It's a great dessert. And you can, you know, you can put a little, you can put some berries on top of it or some whipped cream or just serve it plain. And it's great for the holidays because it must be made ahead. So, and it has to be chilled. So you just have it in the refrigerator ready to go when your guests are ready for
it. Okay. All right. Well, that's not what I was expecting. I thought, I thought it might be a little bread pudding like or something, you know, for a chilly night in Chicago. Do you have anything like that?
Well, for a chilly night in Chicago, there are other options for you. There's actually the apple kuchen, which is an apple cake, it's so beautiful. The pastry dough goes into a springform pan, and it's apples and dried fruit and a little light almost like a custard mixture, and it's baked until it's really brown and golden on top.
Mm.
And so it's soft and warm. And this is what you need for chilly Chicago.
Yeah, that's I'm just savoring that, listening to your words right now.
Or actually, you know, come back to the hot chocolate. There's a recipe in Baking Chamois for real hot chocolate. And I've always found it interesting. You know, I don't think I'm alone thinking about hot chocolate as the thing that we serve kids when they come in from skiing or skating or after school. And yet in France, and certainly I see this in Paris all the time, all of the cafes serve hot chocolate, and they serve it all year round. And it always strikes me, it's when I see grown men in business suits coming into a cafe at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and ordering hot chocolate. So it's drunk the way coffee would be or tea, and it's not just a kid's drink with marshmallows on top. And there's a recipe, as I said, in Baking Chamois for making hot chocolate with real chocolate, and it's so good.
With a really great quality of chocolate. I've taken to when I'm making hot chocolate now, just putting less than a pinch of cayenne pepper in it, just to spice it up a little bit. And the combination of those two with a really great quality chocolate are just unbelievable. It's delicious.
And a little bit of salt, too, because salt is really important in baking and in desserts, and particularly with chocolate. A little bit of salt really picks up the flavor of chocolate.
Let me take a break, and we'll come back and talk more with Dori Greenspan. Her brand-new book is called Baking Chamois, C-H-E-Z-M-O-I, as in the French, Chamois, Baking Chamois, as you can hear, fantastic book. And I just want to talk about, you know, we have people this time of year on a Sunday, they're doing, you know, starting their holiday baking, starting the holiday cookies. Maybe you can offer some tips and suggestions, to avoid some of the pitfalls. Maybe take some phone calls as well for Dori at 312-981-7200 if you're having baking dilemmas that one of the world's experts can help you with. 312-981-7200 on WGN. 12:26, Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN and our Food Time Show, Chicago Radio's original cooking and dining show, today with Dori Greenspan, James Beard Award winner, multi cookbook author, her latest Baking Chamois, helping you with some of your holiday baking today and your questions at 312-981-7200. And Dori, a question on our text. What is the best way to store Christmas cookies that are made a couple of weeks before Christmas from the 847 area code?
Okay, well, storing cookies, I'm a big fan of the freezer. And I like to, it's funny, in a baking kitchen, the freezer is a tool just the same way a mixer or a spatula is. And So I like to freeze. The important thing about freezing is to get all the air out of the package. It's the air that causes spoilage. And so you need to make an airtight pack. What I do sometimes is I stick a straw in a plastic bag, gather the plastic bag around the straw, and suck the air out of the bag.
Wow.
There's probably a more elegant way of doing it, but that's the way I do it. And then I double wrap the bag. So the freezer is really the best way to store. When you're storing cookies at room temperature, the really important thing to remember is to store soft cookies with soft cookies and crispy cookies with crispy cookies. Because if you mix the two, you'll end up with all soft cookies.
Any kind of special containers that you like better than others? You're talking about air tightness, and with your straw and plastic bag method, I mean, that pretty much vacuum seals it. So I guess
that's right.
The container doesn't matter,
right.
But are you good with just a regular Tupperware container, or do you prefer glass?
Yeah, for storing at room temperature, yeah. And I also put sheets of either parchment or wax paper between the layers. But it's really, if you're keeping something, if you're starting now, so a few weeks before Christmas, then you want to be able to make things that can freeze. One of the things that I like to do is, you know, you have to really be a good organizer of your time, but when I have time to bake closer to cookie munching time,
yeah,
I like to get my dough made, for if it's for cutout cookies or even scoop cookies, get the dough made, cut out the dough or scoop the dough, and freeze the cookies unbaked so that I have all of the dough frozen, ready to go for one big bake. And that way I can give cookies that are freshly baked.
That is a fantastic idea. Let me take
It depends on your timing, though. You know, you have to be able to have a lot of time to bake toward the, you know, toward the end of cookie baking season.
Right. Well, but if you do part of your work early, then it might be easy to, you know, simply defrost and do the baking later on. You know, if you've
And with cutout cookies, you don't have to defrost. You go straight from the freezer onto a lined baking sheet and into the oven.
Oh, okay. Wow, I'm learning so much here today.
It really can make the bake, the whole, you know, when you're baking batch after batch after batch, it's nice to have them all just ready to go into the oven.
Yeah, let me take a break and we'll get some more tips and more phone calls and text for Dory Greenspan, 312-981-7200 WGN. 1239, our Food Time Show is sponsored by the Greek Islands Restaurant. America's most popular Greek restaurant. Talking baking today with Dory Greenspan, the author of Baking Chez Moi, brand new book, and 11 other cookbooks. Three-time James Beard Award winner. Helping you out with some of your baking questions today. And Dory, a question texted in. 312-981-7200. Actually, two questions texted in. Kind of interesting. One saying, my cookies spread out too much when I'm baking. Another says, why won't my cookies spread out the way they're supposed to when I'm baking? What's the problem here?
Okay, these questions are hard to answer because I don't know the recipe, and often the problem is a recipe problem. But, you know, sometimes with cookies that spread too much, it could be that the baker is not using butter but might be using a substitute. Often the problem is a real simple one, that the baking sheet is hot. That you should always cool your baking sheet between batches.
Oh.
There also might be, I mean, this is like mind reading because I don't know the recipe and I don't know
in
what
general,
what it was like at home. But so sometimes if you're using a spread that's not butter, that you have a spread problem. Sometimes if a baking sheet is warm, you can have that problem. You really always have to make sure the baking sheet is cool. The other thing might be the oven, that your oven might be, the temperature might be lower than you've set it to. And so the cookies kind of melt before they bake. And so it's really, even super duper nifty expensive ovens can be off. And so you should always keep an oven thermometer in your oven.
Do you have a preference for a type of baking sheet? I know that, you know, some bakers prefer different types of materials. What's your preference?
I have a negative preference, which is never to use insulated baking sheets.
Hmm.
I know they've been very popular, but the problem with an insulated sheet is, well, the good news is your cookies will never burn, and the bad news is they'll never really get brown either. And with cookies and with most things that have butter, you want color. You want to bake until you have some color on the cookie, because in baking, color equals flavor. And so I don't use insulated baking sheets for baking. I use pretty standard. I don't have any fancy baking sheets. I actually buy them in a restaurant equipment store. But I always like to line my sheets either with parchment paper or a silicone baking mat. And I find that that helps cookies bake more evenly to use a lined sheet.
I was going to ask if you like that.
Also makes cleanup a snap.
I was going to say that does make it easier. I was going to ask about if you were a fan of the silicone baking mats. Apparently you are. Here's Mary at 312-981-7200. You're on with Dory Greenspan. Hello. Hi, Mary. Are you there,
Hello?
Mary? Yes, Mary, go ahead.
I was just going to ask if, can you store the cookies in a, you know, those Christmas cans?
With Christmas tins.
Like cans.
What's
sure you.
Go ahead.
You mean the Christmas tins, right?
Yeah. Yes.
I'm sorry, yes.
Yeah.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. Of course you can. You know, storing really depends on the kind of cookie that you're storing. Biscotti will keep almost forever. Plain butter shortbread will keep, I shouldn't say almost forever, but they're really, you know, good keepers. The same with plain butter shortbread cookies. Iced cookies, sometimes the icing doesn't keep as well. I mean, you have to know your cookies. But making up a cookie tin and sealing the tin, and if you're going to keep it for a while, maybe wrapping the tin in plastic wrap. Yeah, it's a good way. Keep the tin full and
keep
seal it well.
Yeah, the less air, the better, as we learned before.
I do keep my biscottis in the tins.
Yeah. Crispier.
But I was wondering about others.
Yeah, crispier the better on those biscottis. Thank you for the call. We appreciate that. What's your favorite cookie, Dory? If someone was going to try something, which one would be your favorite?
Well, you know, I'm a simple girl. My favorite cookie is a shortbread cookie. So I have a version of it in Baking Chamois. It's actually, it's the first cookie that I put in the cookie section. It's the vanilla bean sablé. Sablé is French for shortbread. And I love a shortbread for the texture, for that pure flavor. And at holiday time, shortbreads are great because you can decorate them. So it's a very versatile cookie.
It's in Baking Chamois, Dory Greenspan's latest book. I have to say, one of my great pleasures as I look back of 2014 was meeting you and, you know, helping you to bake a little bit on the WGN Morning News. And I'm so happy that you could join us today and that I have the opportunity to say happy holidays to you and your family. Dory, thank you so much.
Dean, it's been lovely. Happy holidays to you. Thank you.
Dory Greenspan on the new book, Baking Chamois, C-H-E-Z-M-O-I. If you're looking for it, recipes from my Paris home to anywhere.